You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, June 3rd, 2024. This is Grandpa Dan. We're streaming at RadioAlbion.com, kicking off the work week. Glad you could join us today. I hope you do have a great, hope you had a great weekend. Hope you have a decent week ahead of you. As always, I start off reminding you, we continue to have our Sven Longshank support links in the description page here. I continue to encourage you to keep dropping him postcards, emails, or whatever you're doing. Let him know. We're thinking about him. Keep him. We're hopefully we're going to get on some kind of home stretch here, and we'll see here some good news at some point. And maybe Sven can be released at some point in the hopefully sooner rather than later. Also, a few programming notes. I'm mentioning this here probably for the next week or so, and then after that, occasionally do have some clunky things not working right on the website because it just is what it is. This is a part of Sven's absence. There's a contact us link at the top of every page that would take you to the chat room, which no longer works. And that is what it is. For some reason, you have a question, you have my Parish of the Patriots email, which you can find on my Parish of the Patriots page. So, I mean, that is what it is. Also, in the player, you know, traditionally, you have your player on the pages here, and you hit those three vertical dots, and it'd bring up a download link. That's not working. Again, it is what it is, but you're not out downloading. If you look directly below the player, it's written right there, download. So just click where it says download. It'll pop open another tab, which brings up another player, and you have your three vertical dots. You can download from there. So you're still in downloading. Look, I'm sorry that things aren't working the way they should. It just, you know, like I say, that just is what it is. Hopefully Sven can get released, and even if he can't do this stuff, if he's not allowed to do this stuff or whatever the case may be, we don't know what that's going to be. Hopefully he can hand all of this over to somebody else who's much more competent than myself, and I can just get back to doing my own thing. So anyway, we've got that out of the way. Now, as of course anybody and all of you are aware, we're in the official month of celebrating Sodomy Pride and Rebellion Against God. This is a part of living in the West. You celebrate sodomy and the rebellion of God, this insistence, this obsession with celebrating this and promoting this. I was just thinking this morning, you know, you'll have people talk about, you know, when as they agitate for these wars, people talk about, you know, oh, you got to be ready to go fight for your country. You got to be ready to go fight for America. You got to fight for your freedom. Freedom isn't free. And I was thinking about how, you know, that just absolutely doesn't apply, because we don't have a nation anymore. We don't. A nation is a people. We don't have that. So what exactly are you fighting for? Well, we have an entire month dedicated to rebellion against God. This is one of the chief rebellions you can do against God. This is what your country, supposedly stands for. So you have to ask the question, why would you go fight to defend that? Would that, if you're a Christian person, would that not put you in opposition to God? Now, we all know that these Protestant churches across the country have very, on some level or another, the subversion is just, they're just gone. You know, the Anglican Church and so many of these other denominations are, you know, they're gone. They've gone off serving some other sort of God. And, you know, like I say, this is on a scale. You have some churches that are maybe a little better than others, but by and large, as a whole, things are pretty bad. Now, you might be tempted to think some churches get, some denominations perhaps get some sort of pass, that not every denomination. You know, some groups, you know, we're told here in America that the blacks are very, very special, and we have to give them special consideration. So you might be tempted to think that the black churches also get some sort of pass. You'd be wrong. This demand, this obsession that everybody go along with and submit to and even celebrate this rebellion against God, it also applies to the black churches as well. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I've got a story from AP via Yahoo News. And of course, they're spamming us with anal pride month propaganda as expected. And I don't plan to do this every show during this month, because, you know, I know y'all are sick of hearing about it, as am I. But I thought this show was interesting because it does teach us how subversion works, how taking over an institution and destroying it works, and how tolerance is a vice and not a virtue. The headline of this story is, "He Feared Coming Out. Now this pastor wants to help black churches become as welcoming as his own." Welcoming. See, we just want to be welcoming. They always dress this rebellion up in this language of inclusiveness, of niceness. Who wouldn't want to be welcomed? You're supposed to automatically have this idea, well, yes, being welcoming to people, that's a good thing. But it's not. If a man comes to your house who's an arsonist and he's standing there with a box of matches and a 5-gallon can of gasoline, would you welcome this man into your house or on your property? It's pretty obvious what this person intends to do. Are you a bad person because you will not welcome the arsonist to come into your home with his 5 gallons of gas and his box of matches? Because after all, we don't want to be rude. We don't want to be telling this person, get off my property or else. We don't want to run him out on a rail. We have to be welcoming. Well, you might hurt his feelings if you tell the arsonist you can't come in. This idea that they dress things up in these feel-good terms, too many people fall for that. Too many Christians have fallen for that, and that's how they've lost their churches. It was daunting when Reverend Brandon Thomas Crowley, at age 22, replaced a beloved pastor who had ministered to one of the suburban Boston's most famed black churches for 24 years. Well, I can see a problem right off the bat. Who the hell puts a 22-year-old in charge of a church? These churches have boards and they're run like a democracy. And see, they let people into these administrative and on these boards and become elders. And this is where it comes in. It was more daunting, at times agonizing, to reach to the decision 6 years later in 2015 that God wanted him to tell his congregation that he was gay. To his relief, most of the worshipers at Murdoch. Now, we have to stop it because we know the media lies about everything. This is not, you know, if you're listening to this, you're at least that cued in. The media lies about everything. So we have to, anytime we do these stories, I just take it for granted that y'all understand, as do I, that you have to take all of this with a grain of salt. So when they say the worshipers embraced him, well, that's probably a lie. They won't tell us how many people quit the church over it. You know, was it half? Was it 3/4? But they're not going to give you that information because they're telling you a story. They're spinning a narrative. They're trying to convince you, see, this is what good Christian people do. To his relief, most of the worshipers at Myrtle Baptist Church in Newton, Massachusetts, embraced him. Crowley's career has flourished. Now, I thought, as a pastor, you don't really have a career. You have a work that you do in God. A career implies it's just, I mean, a career is a job. I always laugh. By the way, this is a little off topic. I laugh when people talk about these terms. You know, I have a career. No, you don't have a career. Nobody. Listen, nobody has a career. You got a job. You can dress that up in these other terms to make yourself feel better that you're something other than a wagee, but you're just a wagee. Don't kid yourself. There's no such thing as career. It's a job. And when you're gone from that job, and you will be gone from that job, it'll go right on without you. It'll be somebody else's job, whether or not they decide to call it a career. But as a preacher, as a supposed, somebody who's supposed to be a man of God, you don't have a career. You have a calling. You're doing that which the Lord has instructed you to do, whether it pays a lot or little. if you're making $20 a week sometimes, as some men of God do, then you do it anyway. It's because it's not a career. It's not about money. It's a calling. You do it if you don't make any money. You know, a career is a job. In other words, you're doing it for a paycheck. Once again, another red flag, you know, of what has happened to these churches. Crowley's career has flourished, and he's now written a book. Of course. What is this book called? Queering the Black Church. That he hopes can serve as a guide for other congregations to be, quote, open and affirming to LGBTQ plus people rather than shunning them. I'm sorry. I've said before, one has to be curious about where this obsession with promoting this is, because it runs counter to, in a lot of ways, to the agenda of the government and et cetera. But there's this overriding obsession with promoting it, even when it's detrimental to their other plans. And yet we see, you know, that there's this obsession, and it has to be promoted continuously. Likewise, you see here, this person's obsession is continuing to spread this to other congregations, queering the Black church. So in other words, you've got to change the Black church to being centered around sodomy. I mean, queering is being used as a verb here. What does this mean? It means you're changing the church. You're trying to change people's fundamental beliefs. And again, you have this appeal to fake niceties. You got to get people open and affirming instead of shunning them. You see, you want to be open and affirming. In other words, you have to encourage it. Crowley, 37, was born in Atlanta and raised in Rome, Georgia. He admired the preachers he heard as a child, especially at Lovejoy Baptist Church, his home congregation. One Sunday, however, the pastor preached a fiery sermon against homosexuals. He called them all kinds of names, using derogatory phrases and really describing it as a detestable group and a sinful thing, and I just sort of knew he was talking about me, Crowley said in an interview. This was my first introduction to really knowing the beauty of who I am as a queer person. Now, it's implied here, he was a young person when he heard this, and he knew he was talking about him, and they never tell us, do they? As a young person, what got him started on this path? I'll be blunt. What age was he molested? Because we know you're not allowed to say it. You're not supposed to say that. You're not supposed to say the thing, Dan. You're not supposed to say those things. But we know this. How old were you when the first homosexual introduced you to this? Introduced this idea, because it didn't come into your head. Living in the Black community and going to Lovejoy Baptist Church, you didn't come up with this homosexual thing all on your own. What age were you, son? What age were you when the first homosexual started grooming you, started introducing you to this notion? They don't ever go into that. They act like it just popped up all on its own. Why, he was just born. You're just born this way. Now we're supposed to look at this, and whoever this preacher was that did why he was such a bad person, because it gave him a bad feel. When a preacher, such as what's being referenced here, when that preacher was giving a hellfire and brimstone sermon against homosexuality, this is a warning. He was simply giving a warning. He was speaking the truth. You say, When this preacher spoke the truth, when this guy heard this for the first time, as it's being relayed here, he heard this hellfire and brimstone preacher preaching against homosexuality. See, he heard the truth. He rejected the truth. He went on and rejected the truth and then went to work to change the church so that people wouldn't hear the truth. It's important. See, Christian people get all off track thinking it's their job, you know, somehow to convince people and change their mind. And it's not. It's never that. Your job is to speak the truth. And if people hear the truth, you know, they have no excuse. See, when the day of the Lord comes for this person, he's not going to be able to say, well, no one told me. No one told me that was wrong, because he heard, we're told right here, he heard a very specific sermon against these things, that it was sinful. It's a sin against God. It's an abomination. It's an open rebellion against the Lord. He heard that, and he chose to reject that, and not only chose to reject that, but his response to that was to then go forward and try to change the church, to throw gas on the fire of his rebellion and work to destroy the church and work to move to make sure nobody else heard that truth. The hellfire and brimstone sermon that he heard from the black preacher that told him this was wrong had more love in it than anything this person or the people writing this article promoting this have. Somebody that warns you you're going into a bad situation is going to end poorly for you is a lot more love in their heart, you know, even if they're telling you something you don't want to hear, you know. They're telling you something you don't want to hear. That's more of a love than somebody sits there and says, yeah, go on and do it. You know, stick your hand in the meat grinder, stick your hand in the wood chopper, whatever. It'd work out fine. Wouldn't want to, you know, make you feel bad or tell you you're making a poor decision. Crowley said his great-grandmother repeatedly assured him that he was made in the image of God. She also told him about getting pregnant at 14 and breaking away from her own church after refusing its demand to apologize to the congregation. She would say, God loves you, Crowley recalled. She said, they almost made me take my own life when I was pregnant, but I came to know a God beyond the church, and I've got beyond that what these preachers say. Nonetheless, throughout this period, Crowley felt he was called to be a Christian pastor, a preacher. This is important. I want to restart over here. Nonetheless, throughout this period, Crowley felt it. He was called to be a Christian pastor, without repentance, without fixing these things, a preacher of the social justice gospel. See, he's preaching a different gospel. He's not preaching a gospel about Jesus Christ. He's not preaching a gospel related to Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life. Truth, center word there. A way, the truth, and the life. He's not preaching a gospel about the Lord. He's preaching a new gospel. See, they're convoluting here. A Christian pastor preaching the social justice gospel. You see, there's only the gospel. There are no other descriptives that go before that. There's no such thing as a social justice gospel. That's a different gospel. That's a gospel of the world. There are no other adjectives. There's just the gospel. So he decided that he was called to subvert the church. It gets weirder as we go, by the way. Believing he had to hide his sexual identity in order to pursue that calling, he began dating a girl at Lovejoy. So in his pursuit of this new gospel, his first thing to do was to lie to everybody. You see, he knows he doesn't have any reason, he doesn't have any right to be in this position because he's subverting. It's a conscious choice. So he chooses to lie and deceive the congregation, even to the point of lying to some girl, some woman, to lie to her in a relationship as a cover so that he can get in here and subvert the church. He had still not come out by the time he entered Morehouse College in Atlanta, joining its Martin Luther King Jr. International Chapel Assistance Program. While at Morehouse, he said, he experienced his first serious romance with a young man, but led his family to believe it was a non-romantic friendship. I don't want to be graphic here, but you know, as I know, what a quote-unquote romantic relationship in these things is. You know, I sometimes wish that, like, whenever the media uses terms like this, romantic, first ever romantic relationship with another young man. I wish they would have, like, a one-minute clip attached to that of hardcore gay porn so people could see what this romance is, what it consists of. This is not flowers and courtship here. They always do. They always try to fluff it up. They try to, you know, dress it up. Like it's something that is not, you know, attach a 30-minute clip of fisting. This is what we're talking about here. After graduating from Morehouse, Crowley was accepted by Harvard Divinity School. He considered abandoning his dream to be a preacher and instead write books about the black church being dead. Now, that's interesting. How is the black church dead? The black church is just dead because he doesn't like it. The black church isn't dead. He just doesn't like it. It's dead to him. And yet, no, he's on a mission. But one of his friends convinced of his spiritual talents encouraged Crowley to apply for the open pastorate at Myrtle Baptist, less than 10 miles from the Divinity School. Sooner after he expressed initial interest, Crowley said, he received word that he was exactly what Myrtle's search committee was seeking. He recalled his inner reaction. I was like, what are y'all talking about? Like, I'm gay. This can't happen. But he stayed in the running for the job. For the job. Not the calling. For the job. Even breaking away from a weekend gay pride party at Miami to get... Oh, May. You know, it just... He's at the gay pride party again. You know what this is. You know, he broke away from fisting and doing poppers to go back in time to preach a service attended by the search committee. Before long, Crowley was named a finalist. His closest mentors were split over whether he should tell. So his mentors knew. His mentors knew. And they're still encouraging him in this. The subversion runs deep. I guarantee you, his mentors and the search committee didn't consist of black preachers who did the hellfire and brimstone sermon that he had heard about. Before long, Crowley was named as finalist. His closest mentors were split over whether he should tell Myrtle's leaders about his sexuality or stay quiet on that topic while doing a good job as a preacher. He chose the latter course and operated that way for 6 years after his election as Myrtle's new senior pastor in 2009. But over time, Crowley said, he realized I could only really do the work of God if I operated from a place of real authenticity. He also found love in the church. Crowley first met Tyrone Sutton, his partner of 3 years, when he was guest preaching. Sutton was sitting at the organ on one of their first dates. They sang and played music together. Dates. Yeah, and then what? Periodically during his life, Crowley said he heard this, and this gets even more creepy. Let me go ahead and read this. Periodically during his life, Crowley said he heard a voice he believed was coming from the Spirit of God. He says it first spoke approvingly of his same-sex attraction as a child in 1993, after he was rebuked by a relative for saying that a male character in a sitcom was, quote, so fine. God doesn't like that, the relative said, but Crowley recalls hearing the voice tell him that God had made him that way. He says he heard it again at age 12, beckoning him to a life in ministry. And years later, as an adult, he said it would guide him through the emotional process of breaking up with his girlfriend after telling her about his homosexuality. Those occasions all occurred in private. In the spring of 2015, Crowley says he was sitting in Myrtle's pulpit one Sunday when he heard the voice speaking to him, telling him it was time to come out. Now, I have to stop here for a minute. Let that sink in. He's hearing a voice. There's a voice telling him all these things. A voice. Not he was thinking about it. He's saying he literally heard a voice. Now, if we're going to take that, if we're going to take him at his word on this, is very interesting. Now, the prophets of the Old Testament, they literally heard a voice from God. And modern Christians, they don't understand this. They think that the prophets just had a feeling or a revelation. The way it worked in the Old Testament, what differentiated a prophet from a false prophet, a prophet would literally be doing his thing, whatever, sleeping, walking around in prayer, whatever he happened to be doing. And he would literally hear a voice of the Lord and say, okay, you're going to go do this. All they did was take dictation. The Lord would say, go tell them this. And he would just go and say, well, this is what God says. It wasn't a feeling. He would literally say, okay, God told me this. Now, the false prophets, they would come around and say, well, I think God wants this, or the Lord says this, and the Lord didn't tell them anything. They just made it up. Now, I think it's interesting that in an actual biblical prophecy, this is what it involves. This is why I don't do prophecy. If I ever say, this is what the Lord says, it'll be because I literally heard a voice that said, go say this. Now, when you introduce this idea of hearing a voice, and we're going to go ahead and just roll with this, that he's telling the truth here, not making it up. Just because you hear a voice doesn't mean it's from the Lord. You see, the devil has a voice too. The devil has a voice too. And he just assumes he feels that it must be God. Well, just because you heard a voice doesn't mean it's the Lord. Are you crazy? These people are going to put me out, Crowley recalls telling the voice that was urging him to share the truth. But minutes later, a tearful Crowley did just that, announcing to his congregation, I am a proud, black, gay Christian male. We already knew, Reverend, one church mother told him. We were just waiting on you. Some congregation members decided to leave Merle. Yes, they're not going to tell us how many left. He really built the church up there, didn't he? Because part of the congregation left. Now, it's minimized in this article, of course. But they're not going to tell us how many actually left. How many are like, yeah, well, no, we're not doing this. Some congregation members decided to leave Myrtle after the announcement, but mostly, according to the media here, which we know they don't lie, mostly there was strong support for the pastor. Myrtle's pews swelled with new members, many of them gay, and Crowley felt emboldened to look beyond Newton and take aim at the broader realm of the black church. So see, the black church doesn't get spared either. It isn't just the white Christian church. The black church, too. They're no exception. They don't get a pass. Now, again, the media lies. You know, this notion, oh, the pew, the congregation swelled. Well, everybody showed up, mostly gays. I wonder how it's doing now. We have the running track record of all of these different church denominations that open up to this, that renounce the truth and go chasing after the narratives of the world. And we know the track record. They dry up and they die because people, they get up and leave. This year, his first book, Queering the Black Church, Dismantling Heteronormativity in the African American Church, was published by Oxford Press. In the book, Crowley recounts more than a century of black Christian preaching that was often laden with homophobic diatribes and broad characterizations of homosexuality as sinful. He notes that the Reverend Adam Clayton Powell Sr. crusaded against homosexuality during his 1908 through 1936 leadership of New York's Abyssinian Baptist Church, one of the most prominent black churches in the country. Myrtle, celebrating its 150th anniversary this year, takes pride in its progressive, inclusive congregation. But many black churches and denominations in the U.S. remain opposed to celebrating same-sex marriages and or ordaining openly gay LGBTQ+ clergy. And they're a target. They're targeting. They always talk about this inclusiveness. Now, in a practical manner, just setting belief and whatnot aside, one would say, if this was just about, well, they want to have a church too. You could say, well, there you go. Got your gay church. You do your gay thing over there, leave everybody. But they don't, do they? No, it's about they've got to expand now. We've got to change. He's got to dismantle this element in the black church. So he sees it a problem as all these other churches aren't doing what he wants them to do. The voice is telling him, you've got a lot to do here. Can't have these black churches not going along with the program. So he's not going to say, well, we've got our gay black church here and people can come here. No, he's got to dismantle heteronormativity in the black church. You see, he's got to spread it. The Reverend Carmen Michael Smith, who wrote Holy Queer, about the gift of being a gay black Christian and lectures frequently on the topic, said he's not as optimistic as Crowley that black churches can be queered. For many members of the LGBTQ plus community, black churches are the site of trauma and exclusion. Those folks aren't coming back, Smith said. It remains a volatile issue in some quarters. The African Methodist Episcopal Church, for example, is expected to vote at an upcoming national meeting on a measure which would allow AME pastors to conduct same-sex marriages. While pastoring at Myrtle, Crowley earned a PhD from Boston University's School of Theology. He hopes to become a professor as well as a preacher. He said via email, "Further serving my queer and black communities in both spiritual and scholarly contexts." The Reverend Martha Simmons, because we've got to have women in there too, why not? An expert in black preaching and founder of the advocacy group Women of Color in Ministry, became a mentor for Crowley after appearing at Morehouse as a guest speaker. She describes him as perhaps the most gifted of all the students she has encountered in her career. "The most impressive thing about Brandon is it's really hard to be queer in a black Baptist world, and that's what he's been in for most of his adult life," Simmons said, "and he handles it all so well." I've said this before, I'll say this again. You're not going to understand all of the things that you see happening around you in the world. It's not possible to understand them and discount the spiritual element here. And you just can't. What does an obsession with quote-unquote queering the black church? Now, I get, look, some of y'all may be sitting here going, well, what do I care about black churches? Why does it matter to me? I'm not black. I'm not going to go to the Ebenezer Baptist Church or whatever the hell else. It matters because you need to understand. You should ask yourself, why this obsession with this? Why is there this obsession? What does it do to further the agenda to quote-unquote queer the black church? Well, why does this line up with the agenda to queer all the white Christian churches as well, to subvert and destroy them? It's not about inclusiveness. It's not about, oh, these people need to have a place where they can, you know, play House of God, where they can LARP as, oh, yes, we're Christians and doing this Christian thing. It's not about that. If it was, they would have their one queer church and say, we're going to leave everybody else alone. But if you're queer and you want to come here, you can do that. They don't. This is the whole article is about, we're going to further this. We got to pursue this. It's an agenda. Of course, he admits he's preaching a social justice gospel, not a Jesus gospel. Why this obsession? You have to understand this includes everything that you see going around. There's this obsession with promoting, subverting, and destroying. The same element that finds it necessary to do this to the black church is the same element that found it necessary and has found it necessary to do it to the white church and to so many other institutions in this country, not just the churches. Look at the Boy Scouts. What did they say? Oh, we need to make the Boy Scouts more. You're just supposed to not remember any of these things. They said, we have to make the Boy Scouts inclusive. With all this pressure put, you've got to allow gay scout leaders. You've got to allow gay scout masters because otherwise you're homophobic. Finally, the Boy Scouts folded because of course they did. And there's where the problem starts, isn't it? They folded. The church folded. They hired a gay pastor because of course they did. They folded. They let the people in. The Boy Scouts, well, okay, we're going to fold. We're going to be inclusive. We don't want to be exclusive. We're going to let the gay scout masters in. And then a few years later, what? Why, there's a sexual abuse scandal in the Boy Scouts. Who would have figured? And they act like, oh, we don't know how this happened. It's a mystery. And then the Boy Scouts has now been destroyed. It's bankrupt. It's a shell of its former self. I thought all that inclusivity and all of that. See, this agenda applies to all institutions. Black churches, white churches, the Boy Scouts. It's the same agenda. Until people get it in their heads that you are going to have to be exclusionary. When people whine and complain and say, well, you got to be inclusive. No, I don't. Get the hell out. You know, I hope you find Jesus. And if you want to come in here and quietly listen and maybe repent, you're more than welcome to do so. But if you come in here with your bullshit, you can get out. We'll escort you out the front door. You got to be exclusive. You got to keep them out because they come in and they subvert and promote it, and the cancer spreads everywhere else That's the agenda. You see it. We've illustrated it with the Boy Scouts. It's illustrated here. This guy's not happy to just be doing what he's doing. He's determined to spread this to other black churches. Do you wonder why? Look, to hone down this before we wrap up, I said, you've got to be exclusionary. You got to exclude. You got to not be afraid to say, no, you can't come in here with that shit. We don't tolerate it. You notice this isn't happening in the mosques. You wonder why that is? You wonder why this isn't going on in the mosques? This isn't happening in different segments of Islam? Because they're exclusionary. They're hardcore exclusionary. They know not to come in there with that. They've got a wall up and they ain't allowing any of that. And the Christian churches have failed to do so. And just like the Boy Scouts, it'll be to their own destruction. We'll wrap up on that note. Hope you enjoyed today's show. I appreciate you stopping by. We'll have new content, obviously, up Monday through Friday here on Radio Albion. I'll be back tomorrow with the Parish of the Patriots. Wednesday, don't want to miss Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson's Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Johnson will be back on Thursday. He's always got a great geopolitical show with his Daily Nationalist. That's a don't miss. I think all of you would agree. I'll be back on Friday with Funny Fridays. We're going to have a more humorous take. We just have a humorous discussion on the topics of the day. Kind of have a light note to wrap up your week. So I do hope you have a great week. Keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.